This show comes to you from the Art of Change Skills for Life. Visit www.artofchange.com to explore how you might grow your communication and leadership skills through workshops, coaching, and more. Plus, you get to work with me. A little bit of warning for today's episode. In talking about how people process and manage change, mental health and wellness certainly is part of the equation. And today we will be discussing surviving suicide. If you know someone who is struggling, or if you yourself have considered the option of ending your own life, I would encourage you to please seek help. Call the crisis prevention hotline in your local area. The world is better with you in it. My guest today is a leadership consultant and NED who works with purpose-led business leaders on change and transformation, and is an ambassador for mental health in recruitment. My guest is Chris O'Connell. I'm Aidan Nipom, and this is the Change Podcast. Welcome to the Change Podcast, Chris O'Connell.
Thanks, Aidan. Thanks for having me on. I'm delighted to be here.
I'm really excited to have you on the show. We met as co-guests on another show, the Essex Business Radio show, and I just really enjoyed your perspective. And then when I heard tiny little tidbits of your story, I was like, well, I think we'd better have you on the show.
Yeah. It's funny how things work out. You know, the more kind of people you meet and talk to and network, actually it yields different conversations. And I was equally impressed with the stuff that you do as well, so I'm very hopeful of a very good conversation, actually.
Thank you. I'm on the west coast of the United States. You don't sound like you're on the west coast of the United States, Chris. Where are you from?
I'd like to be, but I was born in London, but I moved to Bristol 20 years ago, and Bristol is a beautiful part of the UK, very close to the coast, and lots of good sort of music, restaurants, well, pre-COVID anyway, but it's a good cultural city that I really like, yes.
I imagine it's getting either close to dinner or past dinner time where you are.
Yeah, absolutely. It's starting to get dark a little bit.
So, I've given a little bit of an introduction. I think the piece that I think people may be curious about is the mental health and recruitment. I think that's a particularly interesting aspect of the multifaceted work that you do. Would you mind sharing just a little bit of that?
Yes, Mental Health and Recruitment is a global organization that serves mainly the recruitment industry across the world. And the whole concept is around creating awareness within mental health in the workplace, but not just awareness, then a platform to change and action where businesses can actually manage mental health a lot better. As you may know, mental health has always been around, but there's always been a major stigma attached to it. You know, people not being willing or able or honest enough to actually admit they do have mental health. My view is that every single person has a form of mental health. We all have a mind. And particularly with COVID, I think it's come to the fore quite a lot. So the founder, Rhonda, launched it 3 or 4 months ago. And we've had a great response. We've done a survey recently. And for me, it's about people like me and as many people as possible showing up as our true selves. So I've done a number of podcasts where I've talked about my own mental health, which is quite a paradox. Being a leadership coach is quite a brave thing to do. But I'll talk to you about why I've done that in a bit. But, and encouraging others that it's okay not to be okay. And actually, it's a strength and courage to be open about your feelings and your mental state. Which doesn't only help you, it helps other people. So it's something I'm very passionate about, and something I think is very prevalent for everyone across the world.
Yeah, you mentioned that aspect of doing that in the context of being a leadership coach. I do think that many people associate authority or working with authority as needing to prove your worthiness, and mental health is talking about the, any issues that we may be having feels so incredibly risky. I think that's really interesting. At the end of the day, we're all humans. So it makes a lot of sense to me that vulnerability would actually be an asset and not a drawback.
I think so. I mean, I'll talk to you about my journey, but obviously I've been a a reasonably successful leader in my own right. Now I coach leaders, but you know, where I am, where I'm now is born out of my own vulnerability in leadership myself. You know, when I was running a multi-million pound business, I used to put a suit on, become a very different person, like a stoic kind of motivational person that wasn't necessarily me, because I felt I had to be that person. So I changed into this different person. And I think actually, when a leader takes off his mask or his cloak or his kind of veil of strength and actually engages with his people or her people, you do actually get better buy-in and better performance. And that is what I'm finding, that some leaders are finding difficult and some leaders are embracing. So it's that whole change. And I think the whole landscape is changing around that compassion and empathy-led approach, as opposed to work harder and shouting and telling and pointing at people. It needs to be a completely different way of engaging.
Yeah, I mean, I find that this is true across the board. It's not just in leadership. I'm finding this is true. Yes. In collaborative endeavors, artistic endeavors, the old model of directing theater, for example, isn't really working anymore. There's a lot of chatter coming out about the abusive nature of theater instruction. Yeah. Where they sort of break down the performer until they can finally receive critique effectively. And then those are all broken people out in the world pretending to be other people for a living. You know, parenting as well. Yesterday, my mother came over and watched a movie with the family, and my my stepdaughter spilled her milk, classic. And and we just cleaned it up. It wasn't a thing. Mm. And my mom was like, oh my God. If I had done, when I was a kid, when I spilled anything, I got screamed at. How could you spill that? What are you doing? Go clean it up. And it was like, you know, that's just not how we do it in our house.
It's amazing how what happens in our past, you know, our parents, it cascades down to us. And it's, you know, sometimes I have to watch myself around re-engineering some of the habits that I picked up from my parents around how I manage or parent my children as well. And, you know, how many times was I told, no, you can't do that? And actually an approach of just talking is better than, you know, just telling someone no. I think it's can be very damaging, that very singular approach around just being told you can't do something, you can't do this, you're not supposed to do this. You know, I think it's about a balance between providing autonomy and allowing individuals to be the masters of their own destiny, and also make mistakes as well. You've got to learn from your mistakes. It's a very fascinating time we're in, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, well, it's changing times. And speaking of changing times, the topic of the show, of course, is change is sort of this general idea. We use this word change everywhere for all kinds of things. So I'm curious, Chris, when you hear the word change, when you think about change in your own life, what does that mean to you?
It's ever evolving. You know, I constantly look back at myself and think, at the time I was in a really good place, and then where I am now, I'm constantly being a better version of myself. It's like it's very fascinating. So I currently, right now, I think I'm in a good place. I think I'm mentally strong. I'm doing all the right things. But I just know that there's so much more potential, so much more that can happen to me. And sometimes change is forced upon us. And sometimes change, you know, we choose to have change as well. And that's you know, I've had a lot of trauma in my life as well that has kind of made me the person I am. But I still think you have a choice around how you react to certain situations as well. And I find change fascinating. You know, I believe I've enabled a lot of my own change, but also it does affect you. You know, the type of people you hang around with, what content you absorb, what you're doing outside of work can really affect your evolution as well. So, but also as well, some people fear change. Some people don't enjoy any form of different perspective, which I find fascinating as well.
Yeah, I find that very intriguing. I haven't had many guests on the show who have openly admitted that like change is terrifying and difficult. Most people who are interested in coming on the show, you know, already sort of recognize the inevitability that change is. And so it's all in how you deal with change that matters. But I'm also like super curious, what is that like to live in a world that's constantly in flux and just be sort of like clinging to, I don't know, your Barca lounger for dear life?
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's right. I think we're all in that same boat to an extent now with what's going on with the landscape. So there's constant change, constant different rules and regulations. So the way I center myself is just to think about what my values are, what my purpose actually is. And my purpose is to try and serve others and continually improve myself. So I think if you've got the right values and the right principles and the right purpose, you kind of condition yourself to change, and you kind of expect it, and you kind of embrace it a bit more, I think, as well. Because we just know it's constantly going to happen now. I mean, God knows what's around the corner.
Yeah. I'm kind of struck by that it's always been that way. We just didn't notice. Like, it's just sort of been thrust in our face more this year. 2020 has been very much like, oh, guess what else? It's different now, and it's only been an hour.
Laugh our way through it and just bring it on, basically.
Although I imagine everyone will need therapy after this year, but who will be the therapist for the therapists? That's what I wonder.
Oh, I say that a lot. Who leads the leader? Who trains the trainer and everything? Yeah, everyone needs someone, definitely.
Yep. Yeah. Well, Chris, I was wondering if you, as you were thinking about change before joining the program, you've been through so many changes. Was it hard? Did you find it hard to think about, like, what is one fork in the road moment for me? Because I know that for you, there's been many.
There's been two or three really big ones, and probably a couple of dozen quite big ones. But I think I would say losing my business, and then having a couple of very severe suicide attempts, which I can talk about now if you like. I built a very, very successful multi-million-pound business that won numerous awards across the globe. We were flying very high. And for one reason or another, that business then failed, and I lost the business, and I had to take 3 or 4 years out because I was burnt out as well. So going from a very successful CEO in my own right to, you may have known this program, Judge Judy, watching Judge Judy every day, watching daytime TV every day was a huge contrast, you know. And it affected my mental health beyond any comprehension, really. I mean, my mum abandoned me when I was 2. That was bad enough. But this kind of loss of my identity, my purpose, hit me for 6. So it was gradually building up over weeks. I was getting up later and later during the day. And then for about a week, I thought seriously about committing suicide. The day arose when I decided I was going to get in my car and drive to a particular train station, which I'd already thought about, and I was 100% convinced in my own head this was what I was going to do. 100%, nothing would change that. And the sense of relief I was forward thinking about of being no longer being here was amazing. I was saying to myself, if I could stop how I was feeling, that would be the best route. So I got into the car, drove to the station. My car broke down. Some person managed to help me fix it. Got to the station and had planned out that this particular station had trains, high-speed trains, travelling through it every 25 minutes or so. So it's pretty much guaranteed that I would be able to jump in front of one. Got onto the platform, and there was one or two people there. I was pacing up and down, waiting for the train to come. 20 minutes passed, no train, and then one came, but it stopped at the station, which was not helpful for me at the time. And then it got half an hour, 35 minutes, come on train. I was willing and begging the train to actually come, because I was just gonna jump. I was looking over the edge, knowing I could do it. And then I got a phone call from somebody, and I kind of somehow snapped out of it and managed to get back into my car and drove home. So, and there's been two or three instances like that. And since that point in time, I've completely changed my mindset. I was a very materialistic individual, very successful, but very focused on my, you know, what house I'd have, what car I have, what holiday I might have, the biggest office, the next award, and extremely successful, but wasn't really on the planet. So that incident completely changed my mindset around why I'm here. And now I'm full of gratitude, full of purpose, and full of fulfillment. And my modus operandi has completely changed. I'm happy to talk about my mental health and my suicide attempts. And I want to help as many people as possible who go through the same kind of feelings and thoughts, because I know what it's like.
Thank you for sharing that. That's very vulnerable and, excuse me,
it's okay.
And very vivid. Yeah, do you recall before you got in the car, where were you?
I was at
what
home.
What was happening that day?
Oh, it was a bit of a build up actually over time, but I think it got really strong for about 7 or 8 days before then. Every day I woke up thinking, I'm going to do it. And it, as each day got closer, that feeling of intensity of wanting to kill myself was just palpable. I couldn't really get out of bed. I couldn't really do anything. I was very depressed. Everything just became a huge challenge. I saw every single kind of decision or thought as just negative and wrong. It was just quite hard to explain. If I may backtrack a little bit and give you some context.
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
Good. So I was born in a caravan. And I was 2, my brother was 3. My dad came home from work. He was working night shifts to find me hanging out the caravan window. My brother readied the fridge. So my dad came home from work and my mum had left us in the caravan or trailer all night and never turned up again. So she stole whatever possessions we had. And it vanished, didn't turn up for any custody or anything. So I was abandoned. My dad wasn't particularly emotionally intelligent, emotionally aware, capable of looking after 2 very young boys. He just wasn't ready emotionally to do that. So I was fostered for 4 years. Then he remarried and I was abused by his wife. So lots of kind of childhood trauma, which didn't really bode me very well. And the first 2 female figures in my life were obviously not great role models for me. So that affected my relationships and my confidence and everything really. At school, very, very shy, felt very different, very inferior, didn't feel connected to anyone really, because I just felt that, you know, I wasn't worthy, basically. Managed to battle through that and, you know, earn enough money to move out of my dad's house. We moved back to my dad and then joined a corporate recruitment company, one of the largest in Europe. And for some reason, although it was a very, very hardcore sales environment, I became the worldwide top bidder there. And I think the reason why I did that was because I had no fear around what had happened to me when I was young. I kind of didn't treat anyone as inferior or anyone as superior. I just kind of went for it. Mm-hmm. And became the worldwide top biller and became very successful and then built my business that I talked about, got that to several multi-million pound levels. And so very, 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 very successful career. But personally and emotionally and psychologically, I was all over the place. So kind of left, was living 2 lives really. On the face of it, you'd see me in a very sharp suit, you know, directing, leading, coaching people, doing very well. But I was a bit of a mess, actually. And how I got to that level, I still can't really explain it. What that trauma gave me my drive. And I think you can either talk about change. There's a lot of stuff that's happened to me, but it's minimal compared to other people, don't get me wrong. So I'm not looking for sympathy, and I don't think I ever have, but
that's so interesting. So the people who have had the most traumatic stories often will then follow them with, but I know that I don't have it that bad compared to other people. So I don't. Is that just you feeling like your trauma isn't worthy, or is that because you don't want people to, you worry about people judging? And I apologize if this is an insensitive way to
No,
ask this question, but it comes up
absolutely
so
not.
much.
No, I think you're probably right. I think there probably is a little bit of that in there, to be honest. But I think also as well, I think that I don't think I've ever used it in a way of wanting to be a victim or put myself in a victim state. What I'm saying is that you can have the adversity and the trauma, you can actually use it to your advantage. And I now see that as a gift because it has enabled me to push on. It has enabled me now to see things from a different perspective. I've got no resentment towards any of that. So, but yeah, that worthiness is still there in me a little bit. And actually, I almost see that as helpful because I now recognize that and I can see it in other people as well. So I use that as a way of coaching it out of others as well and actually explain. And by being myself, people can see my vulnerability and most of my clients will, they see it as a massive strength because I'm being myself, whereas other coaches might go in a very kind of rigid suit and try and do the archetypal,
Right.
this is my program, this is how it works. Every single person is different. So I don't go into my businesses with a preset, this is what I'm going to do. I understand the individual and then tailor it from there. And but primarily by just opening up and being myself. So what I don't encourage is people to be so open and honest that you can lose respect by just being too vulnerable. But I think there is a definite need to tweak our approaches with our personal lives, our friends, our colleagues around just being ourselves a bit more. That's what I'd say.
I'm imagining you standing there on the train platform, and the frustration of that, of the time you had it all timed out, and then the timing
Yeah.
didn't work in your favor. But you had done your homework, which I worry about being indelicate when I talk about these things, but I
Just go for it, it's fine.
my personal experience around suicide has been that often people do their homework. And so, what do you think? What do you think happened there? Was it divine intervention? Was it chance? Was it, did the train break down on the other end? Do you, what would have happened if that, you never would have gotten that phone call, but
Yeah, I think it was for divine intervention. Who knows? I do believe a little bit around kind of that kind of stuff, but I'm just thankful that it didn't now. And I think, but it's very difficult to get people to understand. I mean, I'm sure some listeners who haven't experienced that or don't necessarily believe they've had mental health issues or whatever. I've heard stories around people describing it as very selfish and very kind of. And to an extent it is, but when you're under that influence of thinking, it honestly, yeah, I defy anyone not to want to do that. It's a very difficult thing to explain. Yeah.
And in that, in those moments, were you thinking about who, what the consequences would be for the people who were left behind?
Yeah, I was, but obviously not enough. And I think back now, I mean, the devastation that would have caused is it was making me upset talking about it. I've got, at the time, I had one young child, I've now got two. Yeah, I mean, that probably is the biggest denominator in all of this moving forward now. So I unfortunately I can't change what happened.
No, of course not.
What I can change is how I react to that and what I can do to help others avoid that situation as much as possible.
And the reason I'm so curious, and I will be editing this piece out, but my stepfather committed suicide.
Oh wow. Oh God, I'm so sorry.
Well, that was like 11 years ago, 12 years ago.
Really?
So it, so it's like a rare opportunity for me to try and understand something. But my mom listens to the show, so I'm like, I
Oh,
don't
bless you.
know. Well, so here's what comes up for me is like, Oh, I remember what I was going to ask you. It wasn't about that. That was why I couldn't remember the question, is because I had to be honest about what I'm experiencing around this. A lot of times when it comes to suicide, the people who are left behind have this like anger. This like, how could you? How could you do this to me? How could you? And so that's, the tears for me are this like guilt around that, because I was angry because of caring so deeply about her, Yeah, but people have this like anger at the person who left.
That's
And
understandable, but then I think anger then does turn to grief and loss, isn't it? Or people just, or they do it the other way around. They have the loss first and the anger. It can affect people in different ways, so.
I also wonder if it's like, what I'm hearing from you is in that moment you were in distress, you were in pain. It wasn't You certainly considered the people who would be left behind, but in that moment, that's not, it's like priorities is just to end the pain.
I think it got so bad that my thinking was around, I'll be doing them a favor if I wasn't alive, like my own children, my wife, my brother, my family. Oh, they'll feel better if I wasn't alive. That's how bad it was. Obviously, completely wrong.
And I've heard this. I have heard this from people who are still with us, thank God, whose the narrative is like they try and convince themselves that the world will be a better place without them. And I'm of a strong mind that if you're here, it's because you're supposed to be here, whatever that means. But if you weren't supposed to be here, you wouldn't. And I apply this to the terrible as well as the good. So, it, not to say that there's some divine, I'm not a religious person, so I don't really know what the explanation is for why we're all here,
No,
but
no.
we're all here, and that goes for this like horrible people are here doing horrible things. If they get to be here, then you, a good person, should also be here. And you, the person who's doing mediocre things, should still be here. And you, the person who's like failed at doing everything good and just has, you're under a pile of crap, you still get to be here. I'm just of that mind that being here entitles you to be here,
How you
whatever
choose
it's
to
worth.
be is your choice, I guess. But yeah, I think we've all got a right to a life without doubt, unless there's completely heinous, abhorrent situations going on, of course. But
Well, that, yeah, that gets tricky. That gets into sort of capital punishment questions, doesn't it? But
but
and
maybe not for this podcast. Who knows?
I mean, the changing landscape of the penal system might be a very interesting question as well, because I do think that there's some people can be recuperated and some people cannot, but yeah, that does get into complicated territory, doesn't it? But I guess we wouldn't want we don't like it. I guess it still applies, because we don't like it when a single person is judge, jury, and executioner for someone else. So what would entitle an individual, right, to be judge, jury, and executioner of themselves? That doesn't seem fair either.
No, absolutely.
That might be where that comes from. Well, I'm just talking a lot. Let me ask you this. For people who are in that state of mind, so I can talk about the survivor side of it all day long, but for people who are in that state of mind, in that frame of mind, what can they do? How do you is there a way to shake yourself loose?
I think there are ways. There's lots of different advice out there. I do think it does stem from trying to love yourself first, which is very difficult, but you can get there. But I think it's about having that courage and having that bravery to say, I'm not okay. And actually, the more times you do that, more often than not, what I found is when I've said that to people, they actually say, oh, I'm not okay as well. So you want to get to a point where, when you ask someone, are you right? And they go, yeah, I'm okay. It's like there's no substance to it. Are you okay? If someone asks me that question, I'll be honest with them. So actually, yeah, I'm really good, or actually, no, today I'm feeling really anxious, actually. I've had a panic attack or whatever. And it kind of is, so initially it's I think it's trying not to feel that there's a stigma around not being okay, and talking to as many people as possible, having that ability just to go, I am going to reach out to someone, I am going to phone someone. It helps as well, but it does really matter the type of, in this day and age, Facebook, Instagram, all the social media stuff, what you eat, the exercise, the people you hang around with, it all contributes to our mental health. So I think on a general level, if you can try and make some time for yourself. So as a leader, I spent 90, 95, 100% of my time just focused on work, and that's what done me in the end. So my advice to anyone is try and put yourself first in a selfless way. So wake up in the morning and go for a walk, or eat the right food, or don't go straight onto your phone. Just try and start your day in a way where you've given yourself some grounding, do some breathing, do some exercise, do some meditation. But if you're in that particular state where, everything is dark, I think your point's very, very pertinent around what's the aftermath going to be like if you did follow that through. You make a very good point around actually, what would my partner feel? What would my siblings feel? What would my kids feel like actually if I did this? And that's a good way of snapping you back into it. Taking yourself out of your own thoughts is the only way I could advise is the best way. Instead of it all being about you, put yourself in your child's shoes, put yourself in your mother or father's shoes around you being dead from suicide. That can really help. And that's what normally happens, is that we get so entrenched in our own negative thinking, it's all about us. Try not to think about you as a person, think about somebody else, and that can work quite well as well.
I have a friend who ideates suicide from time to time, and her one reason that she has never pulled the trigger, so to speak, is that she feels like there is no guarantee that it's better on the other side.
Yeah,
So
that's true. Very true.
this idea that like it would be a profound relief, and she can even get to that place where, even though she's of tremendous value to me, and I've expressed it multiple times, and I try and express it as often as I can, but ultimately that has to come from inside her. It can't come externally.
Yeah.
But despite that, she can still convince herself that I would be better off, that her dog would be better off. She can get there, but she's so terrified that it wouldn't end, and then she'd be trapped in a worse situation.
Well, that's
Like
it.
she's Yeah, and so that's for her, that's been her like release valve to get back to reality, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's it. And I think you're right. Everyone has got their own little way of getting out of it. And what I've just said might work for me or other people, but not for others. So, on a general level, the only way I think is that we can all contribute to helping others is by having these conversations. I mean, I don't have to do this. I could have talked about something completely different. I could have talked about a different pivot or change in my life, but I've chosen this because I think it's actually very pertinent of the times as well. It's with the climate, the situation we're going to be in for months, maybe even years now. The more people that are able to do this, I think it's the way forward. And hopefully the listeners will see that as a positive thing, and not one that's not negative in any way.
Can I ask you this? When did you start getting to a place where you were comfortable talking about this? Because to me, that's a pretty profound change. Because the anxiety and ideating suicide, these things are typically the things that we collectively, as humans, hide from each other. Little terrible secrets we tuck away in the deep, darkest holes in our heart. So bringing this out into the open, what was the fork in the road moment that sparked that?
Oh, good question. I think probably about 2 years ago, only 2 years ago, where I got divorced, left the family home, and had some time on my own where I could really, really reflect, not have to answer to anybody and just have that time to think, hang on a second, I'm 43 now, I was 41 at the time. Stop, pause, and just honestly look at my life. And it was transformative. I no longer thought I wasn't worthy. I reflected on my success and saw it as success, whereas before I was embarrassed by it. I think I just had that time where I just thought, you know, I'm all right. I'm actually okay. And I was doing things like looking at myself in the mirror and talking to myself every day and saying, Chris, you're okay, actually. So I think it just came with age. I think it was a combination of severe loss, trauma, and big events in my life. Losing my mum, being abused, my business, suicide attempts, losing my business. And then moving into a small flat, having to start completely again and thinking, hang on, it's not about what house I live in. It's not about anything other than the only way I'm going to get out of this is if I start at least liking myself, let alone loving my bloody self. And I got to a point where actually I saw myself differently and I started to respect myself. It's very hard to put my finger on. I just had that time to reflect. And now, I'm really proud of who I am. And I'm not afraid or ashamed to admit anything. You know, I've got my faults. I've also got a hell of a lot of ability. I've got a big heart. I'm still learning. I've got a long way to go. I'm looking forward to the next period of my life.
Well, thank you so incredibly much for being hugely vulnerable with me. And okay. Is there, and with everybody listening,
yeah.
Is there any last thoughts you'd like to share with people? Anything you want to leave them with that they can tuck in their pocket and take with them after listening to this episode?
I just hope people can take something from this. If at the very least they take on board that it's okay to be yourself. And what I mean by that is your true self. It's okay to have a bad day. It's okay to be vulnerable. If anything, that brings a lot more trust and engagement anyway. So lose the business attire or the mask, and just don't be afraid to be you, and just enjoy yourself, and then others will enjoy you as well.
Chris, thank you. This conversation has taken a couple of unexpected turns for me, but I'm incredibly grateful for you being here today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I really enjoyed it, and I hope we can chat again soon.
Vulnerability. Why is it so hard for us to just admit that we're human to each other? We work so hard to just convince ourselves that we're supposed to be perfect accomplishment machines, just success manufacturers, completely flawless. And we work really hard to put on the appropriate mask because, quite honestly, there are ample signals out there that our best just isn't good enough. But there are also ample signals in our lives that our best is yet to come. And the truth is, we have choices about how we perceive ourselves. Our perspective matters a great deal. Speaking of perspective, I'm reminded of that old story of two kids, one thrown into a room filled with toys, the other thrown into a room filled with horseshit and a shovel. The first kid, when a few hours later, is found just like in a pile of broken toys, just sobbing because they didn't get what they wanted. But the other kid is found just gleefully, giddily shoveling shit. And when asked why, he says, "With all this poop, there's gotta be a horse in here somewhere." Your sense of worthiness must come from within, as must your perception of the ever-changing world around you. I would suggest that as you dig deep for that sense of, I belong here, that you include your flaws in what makes you unique, and just be the best you that you can be. And recognize that there will be days when the best you've got is binge-watching Judge Judy, because we're all only human after all. Thank you for listening to the Change Podcast. If you found this conversation helpful or insightful, please share it with a friend. Remember to click subscribe if you haven't already, and definitely leave us a review. If you know someone who is in a dark place, or if you are considering taking your own life, I would encourage you to seek help immediately by calling the crisis prevention hotline in your area. I'm Aidan Needham, and I wish you the kind of experiences in life you're excited to tell stories about.